Available. Shop today at conservative.edu. Scroll down to bookstore, browse, and place your order today. That's conservative.edu and scroll to bookstore. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these three stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
We're privileged to have with us today Dr. Reed Scheftel. He is a physician, plastic surgeon, heart surgeon, graduate of MIT. Major credentials. Has two books that he's recently published. One is entitled Sanctioned, the COVID Murders, and then the other book is Heroes and Villains, the COVID-19 Book of List. I recommend that you find those on Amazon.com. I recommend both the books. I've scanned both. I've not read them. I've scanned them, talked with Dr. Scheftel about the content of the books, and I find it fascinating. And the one, Heroes and Villains, the COVID-19 Book of List, I'd recommend that to anybody that's concerned about background history of CDC, NIH, FDA, and the leadership there, and what has happened to America and around the globe in the past 4 or 5 years in relationship to the CDC lie to America. So just before the break, we were talking about some of the things that's been done with the COVID vax and the deception that has taken place there. Dr. Scheftel, would you tell us why Big Pharma lied about its vax product and continues to do so?
Yes. The point I was trying to make before we took the break was that all of these diseases that everyone's familiar with, like the Spanish flu, polio, chickenpox, measles, the swine flu of 1976, bird flu in 2005, if you remember that one, and swine flu of 2010, even. You may not even remember those, but none of those were due to a contagious virus. It's all been proven now. Now, there may be some doctors out there who are nodding their heads that can't believe it, but let me ask them and ask the public to do one thing. For example, for measles, look up the work of Dr. Sellards of Johns Hopkins University. He could not demonstrate that measles could be transmitted from one person to another. Dr. Hess could not demonstrate in his lab that chickenpox was transmissible from one person to another. Polio, we have plenty of evidence now that it was caused by an insecticide called lead arsenate. And then when lead arsenate stopped, polio stopped. And then they started using something called DDT, as everyone's familiar with. And then polio started again. Extensive studies have been done on this. More than 200 laboratory studies in our most prized institutions. And not a single case have they been able to transmit the disease from a sick person to a healthy person.
Why are we not told this?
So, well, I'm going to tell you right now, because it all is going to build up into the obvious thing, which is M-O-N-E-Y.
That's right.
And I can tell you that Big Pharma makes an awful lot of money from selling vaccines. That's obvious. Everyone should know that. I'm talking on the order of trillions of dollars.
Yes.
And if a person like me comes along and tells the world that there is no such thing as viruses, because it's all been a theory that we've been taught, they are going to lose trillions of dollars. So they're going to fight me tooth and nail to try to say that I'm not qualified or I'm wrong or whatever. There's something wrong with my logic.
Any physician across
the nation
stood against it. I've said that. Yes.
Huh?
Any physician that stood against Big Pharma in the past 5 years, they've said that.
No, they haven't. They haven't said there's no such thing as viruses.
No, I'm saying they're claiming that the doctors are incorrect if they come up and question it. But you're right.
Well, yeah, but you got to remember, what are they questioning? Nobody else has said there's no viruses.
That's correct.
They've said that there was no need for lockdowns, or there was no need for masks, or other things. But very few even of those. And the ones that have said that and stood by it have been punished severely. Some of them have lost their medical license and all kinds of things.
Right.
The government is involved in this. Lots of organizations, even that have fancy letters after their names, are involved in this, like the AMA and so forth. And I just want to tell you that it's correct as far as viruses go. There should be no... Now, Dr. Bhattacharya, who you've mentioned already, is not willing to go that far, he tells me. I'm a very, very good friend of his because we debated COVID for 24 hours. And when I tell him now that there's no viruses and there was no SARS-2 virus, he will tell me he's not willing to go that far yet. And he's the NIH director.
Right.
So I have him to convince. And it's going to be difficult, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah. But I have confidence in him to this degree. I watched him in a wonderful interview the other day where the Marxist media interviewer tried to pin him down, and he said, "He said, the government, we have no authority to tell the general public what to put in their bodies."
Well, he's correct about that. I agree 100%. Like you said, is DeSantis correct to not require any vaccines in Florida anymore? I agree with that. But, you know, you will remember Dr. DeSantis was in favor of the vaccines for a while.
That's right.
He was congratulating people for taking the COVID vaccine.
That's right.
And Dr. Bhattacharya was in favor of the vaccines at the beginning. I don't know exactly where he stands now, but I still think he's in favor of it for older people.
Yes, he says they're good vaccines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But I'm not for telling you what to put in your body.
Exactly. Now, that's his position.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you now, there are not any good vaccines. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very strong statement. I'm not willing to just say some vaccines are good and some aren't anymore. I'm telling you, vaccines are bad because they are based on helping prepare your body to fight against a future infection with a virus. And there aren't any. So you don't want to be taking vaccines for viruses that don't exist.
Well, that was
because vaccines have terrible side effects.
Yes,
is that clear to everyone?
That was proven by the COVID vaccines when ultimately they said, begin with Pfizer said 97.5% efficacious, then they finally said 85%, then 57%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because as time would go on, it was proven that it had no efficacy.
Correct. And it also was dangerous.
Yes.
Having no efficacy is one thing. Being unsafe is another.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, whether or not it's safe is far more important than whether it's efficacious
yes.
or not, because you're giving it to people who don't even have the disease yet.
Right.
So
right.
It has to be safe.
Right.
And I made a big, big deal out of this way before the vaccines were released, but I was censored so severely, Dr. Youngblood, that I had a hard time getting the word out. But it's turned out I've been right on everything.
Amen.
Now, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying I wish people would listen to me more.
Absolutely.
It was very frustrating to live through that for a year.
Hold on a minute. I believe we have Jim on the line. Jim, go over the question or comment, please. Jim, are you there? We've lost Jim, I reckon.
Ask him to call back, because the question, and I would like as many people to call in today as possible.
904-831-0917. Dr. Chef Tull is with us. He's answering your questions about COVID, the COVID vaccine, the efficacy of it. And most of all, we're talking about today the fact that there's major dismantling of the personnel in the CDC. And as a result of what Robert Kennard is doing with that, they're having, as the world would call it, fits about that. So Dr. Sheftall, address that for a moment.
Okay.
Is Robert Kennedy doing the right thing? The president says he is. The president's standing behind him. Go into the details of that for us.
Yes, I will. He's doing the right thing in that case because every single person that was involved in the COVID-19 farce should be either fired or prosecuted.
Well, the firing
because people
is taking
died place because
now.
Of it, and the firing is taking place of it. Fine, he's correct in that way. Now, I happened to listen to part of the Senate testimony that RFK Jr. was subject to recently, and I would only say that he did a good job, generally speaking, but he needs some people up there to help him with the medical part of this. Someone like me. And I hate to keep using my own name, and I know it's boastful, and I apologize
Maybe
for that.
Maybe somebody that's listening can make a telephone call.
I hope so. But I'm just saying, you know, I apologize for keep tooting my own horn here. But he needs somebody who really understands this, because he's not a medical doctor. He's not a medical person, RFK Jr. He is a lawyer who has looked into this in great detail.
Yes.
So that he does have a lot of layman's knowledge of it. And I would say beyond that,
yes,
he knows more than most laymen. Certainly he does, because he's tried cases that involve large pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
But he's not an anti-vaxxer.
That's right.
He vaccinates his own children. Mm-hmm. Nobody that vaccinates their children is an anti-vaxxer. I am an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
And I'm proud of it.
Join the club.
And I'll tell you something, Dr. Youngblood. It wasn't my whole life. I got injected. My mother gave me vaccines when I was young. And as a surgeon, I had to get vaccines as I went through all my medical training. Because surgeons tend to get certain diseases by sticking their hands wrist deep in blood all day. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I had to get all the vaccines to get privileges in the hospital and so forth. But now that I can prove there are no viruses, I'm not going to get any more vaccines, because without the virus, you don't need a vaccine.
That's right.
And here's the bottom line. Those pharmaceutical companies are making viruses untouchable to the scientific world.
Yes.
Because they know that they'll lose all the revenue that they get from vaccines if there are no viruses. That's so right. They hate people like me who are starting to say, there aren't any viruses out there, and proving it.
That's
before, people couldn't prove it.
As you remember, that's the reason Dr. Fauci said, if you question me, you're questioning science.
No, that was nonsense.
I believe Jim is on the line. Jim, go over the question or comment, please.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Outstanding. Elementary school, early 70s, I was vaccinated for the standard mumps, measles, rubella. They did smallpox back then.
So was now, I, Jim.
In the military. Yeah, I went in the military in 1980. Of course, the United States Army believed that they don't care what you had before, you got them all again.
Yeah.
Now, in 1991, I ended up in an emergency room, and they had thought that I had measles because there was a small epidemic going around, and they were saying that people who got inoculated for the vaccine of measles between the years of 1960 and 1964, that the vaccine was ineffective. I was in my mid-20s, I think, around that period. It turned out to be a bacterial infection which caused spinal meningitis, but the gist of it was I got two measles vaccines, yet there was an epidemic that was going on in the area that I lived in, and they misdiagnosed me.
Correct.
And I've never had measles, per se. But I do recall my father in the mid-70s got deathly ill from a vaccine that he had after he returned from Vietnam as
yes.
a U.S. Marine. So now, that whole thing's always been weird to me.
Now, Jim, can I cut in? Because you've said so many profound things there that we need to address some of them. One of them is, Have you read my book, Sanction the COVID Murders, yet?
No,
by any chance? Okay. If you pick up that book, you will find that one of the appendixes, Appendix 1, is an 8-page single-space list of, they call them serious adverse events, SAEs, serious adverse events after just one shot of the COVID-19 vaccine. I'm talking about the modified RNA vaccine. Modified means they pseudo-uridinated the uracil residues on the RNA that they put in the vaccines. And I know that's a lot of medical mumbo jumbo, and I'm sorry, but I have to tell the people the truth about what these things were. Because the pseudo-uridination made these messenger RNAs last in the body for months. And normally messenger RNA dissolves in a matter of minutes. Okay, and these things are in there for months, wreaking havoc on everybody, which is one of the problems with them. But your dad, could you please explain to me one more time what happened to your dad? Because it sounds like he had long-term sequelae from these things.
Well,
meaning long-term problems from his injections. Is that correct? That he got after Vietnam?
Yeah, but he was also... He's on disability now, but he was also exposed to the defoliant agents.
That complicates things, because, of course, those things were horrible, too. You're talking about Agent Orange and stuff that was sprayed on the
the
jungles so that they could find, defoliation, so that they could catch the North Viet Cong that were hiding in the bushes, basically.
Yeah.
Correct? Okay. That's different.
Deprive them of cover.
Deprive them of cover. But Jim, the point you're making, though, is that we didn't know when we injected these things what the long-term side effects were.
Got it.
Now, in the case of your dad, it might have been the defoliation agents that made him sick. Okay? And it might have also been the long-term side effects of the vaccines they forced all the soldiers to get, which is an enormous number when you're in the military.
Yeah,
one of the biggest contracts the pharmaceutical companies get is on our military young men and women to inject them with lots of vaccines. And it's tragic. It's a disgrace that our military are treated like that. Now, in the case of your dad, we don't know for sure whether it was the defoliation agent or the vaccines, but I can tell you in the years of World War One, before we had defoliation agents, those soldiers got lots and lots of injections of vaccines before they came home, and that's what caused so many of them to die from the Spanish flu. It was not an influenza virus. We've looked into all this now. Also, that was right about the time that aspirin was invented. And instead of giving them in doses of milligrams like we get now, as you well know, you get either 80 milligrams a day, you know, to protect your heart, or you get 350 milligrams of aspirin when you have a headache. They were given doses in the grams. That's 1,000 times higher. And when you go back and look at I've done the work on this. I've gone back and looked at the autopsies. You can see that the pathologists keep saying over and over again, the lungs are filled with blood. And talking about young, the healthiest people we have are the military, young military people. And their lungs were all filled with blood when they died. And that's because they were taking 100 to 1,000 times too much aspirin. Okay? People did not die from a virus. They died from aspirin overdoses and the serious adverse effects of the vaccines they were forced to take. And, you know, World War One was a fairly short war, and let me point this out. Because it was a short war, the pharmaceutical companies had made way too many vaccines. And what were they going to do with all those extra vaccines? Well, they told the public that they needed a vaccine because of all these horrible diseases the soldiers brought back from the war.
That's right.
Isn't that a terrible way to treat our soldiers? It just upsets me every time I think about it. They blamed the illnesses the people were getting from aspirin and everything on the soldiers and then made them take the vaccines, the same vaccines that killed the soldiers.
May I make a historical point as far as World War I, sir?
Yes, sir, please.
There are still areas of France right now where the trench warfare occurred that persistent agents from mustard gas are still present.
Yes.
Now, the effect
Now, you know that mustard gas and defoliation agents are different.
Yes, they are completely different.
I just wanted to make that point for the viewers that aren't as knowledgeable as you.
But yes, absolutely.
100% agreed. You know, this is why the Geneva Conventions came in. They had to stop these countries from using these horrible, anti-human, I'll say, devices to kill the other soldiers. It's just sick what was used.
You were talking about blood or phlegm being present.
Yes.
Very high levels there. That would be a sidebar on that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the lungs were filled with blood, which you can imagine if you take too much aspirin. If you've ever gotten cut after you've taken aspirin for a week, the it bleeds too much. And we, of course, as surgeons in the operating room, always tell people to stop taking aspirin or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which do the same thing, at least 8 days before we do surgery on them, because the life of platelets is 8 days. And we find it very hard to stop the bleeding in the OR if people are taking too much aspirin.
Understood.
It's the same principle, yeah.
All right, Jim, thank you. Do you have another question for the doctor?
No. I was just wondering what his thoughts were on that. These seem to be every 5 to 10 years, these measles epidemics that occur here in the United States.
It's ridiculous. I could speak for years on this. Let's limit it to 10 seconds. The government is in the habit of, and do you know who Dr. Sabin was? He was the one that was in competition with Jonas Salk about the vaccine for polio. Do you remember the Salk and the Sabin vaccines? He wrote an article, an op-ed for the New York Times in 1976 when they acted crazy giving a vaccine for a disease that didn't exist. He wrote an op-ed for the New York Times called Washington and the Flu, because every 10 years or so, another pandemic occurs out of nowhere. It's just invented. It doesn't exist. And in 2010, for example, 10 years before COVID-19, or let's say 9 years, that's why it's called COVID-19, the swine flu was a big deal. It was during the Obama administration. And he told everyone that hellfire would rain down upon us if we didn't get the vaccine for the 2010 swine flu, and only about 25% of the population agreed and got the vaccine. But the day after that happened, nobody got sick. Nothing happened. There was no hellfire that rained down on anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole thing was just a farce.
Absolutely.
And of course, the pharmaceutical companies that support the reelection of these guys love it.
Yes.
When they sell a lot of vaccines. And just that's like, what happened in that case, too.
Well, it's just like with Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
When Robert Kennedy pointed out that she had received $855,000 from Big Pharma for her election campaign. So, Jim, one of the things that I need to ask you is kind of an exit question. When we see the shakeup that's taking place at the CDC and the FDA and NIH under the leadership of Robert Kennedy, is it good or bad? He fired the one that was the director of the CDC, and then he'd already let the, I think there's 7 board members, he had fired them, and now they're replacing them. Is that good or bad? What does it bode in your thoughts?
It's absolutely good, because science, you know, until Copernicus came along there, the world was flat. You always have to question science with theory and hypotheses and tests.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Jim. I agree, Jim.
Jim, thank you so much, Jim, for your call.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917.
Pastor Youngblood, you mentioned that the CDC director was let go.
Yes.
And as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert Kennedy had that right to do it, and he is the one actually that hired her.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the right to let her go for whatever reason that he felt was appropriate.
Correct.
Her name is Susan Monarez, and she is a PhD. She's not a medical doctor. And that may be a little pet peeve I have, but I think the head of the CDC, which stands for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention should be a medical doctor, because they have a much more broad understanding and range of knowledge on the issues that involve disease, mm-hmm. or they should.
Yes.
So I don't think she was the ideal choice anyway.
Well, I find it fascinating when they were interviewing her for confirmation through the Senate. She gave the right answers. But when she got in the position, all of a sudden, she was anti-Robert Kennedy of whatever he directed her to do.
Oh, yeah.
And so he has the right to say, if you're not following our train of thought, if you're not following what we're doing, out of here.
Yeah, that would be true in any business,
absolutely,
wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you hire someone to do a job and to take some of the workload off of you. And if you're doing the opposite things, I mean, I think that's ground for dismissal, don't you?
Absolutely.
So I think it's okay that he fired her. The only problem I have with Robert Kennedy is he needs to get a person up there that frankly knows a lot more about this medical stuff than he does. He's not a doctor. And he does have Dr. Bhattacharya there, who's my good friend. And Jay Bhattacharya certainly has his own... He certainly has his own opinions on many, many things that differ from me. But he's a fine human being, and so his heart is in the right place. And I know him as well as a lot of people, let's say, yeah, almost anyone. And he's a great person, and I'm glad that he's in that position of NIH director. He also has Mehmet Oz, the heart surgeon.
Yes.
Who most people know by him having some kind of TV show that I've never seen, but
Dr.
evidently
Oz
he...
Show, yes.
What's it called?
Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz Show. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Mehmet Oz, you know, was a heart surgeon in either Presbyterian or one of the large hospitals in New York. He's a very knowledgeable person, and he can help Kennedy with things. Dr. Oz is in charge of... something that is involved with Medicare and Medicaid.
Yes.
But and I don't know exactly what his position is, but there are people there that are medical doctors. And but the way I listened to Robert Kennedy answer the questions in the Senate told me that he might have had the right answers on a lot of questions, but he didn't know why enough.
Yes, I know.
And if someone like me could have been there whispering in his ear, he could have taken those senators apart. And it's funny because I spoke to Bhattacharya on the phone the night after that Senate hearing. I've been sick, and he calls to see how I'm doing. But again, that's the kind of person he is. But Jay told me that... Kennedy is going to be a person who is going to be very, it's going to be like a lightning rod, let's say that.
Oh, yes,
because, you know, he came over from the Democratic side, so he's got people on both sides after him.
Let's take a final few seconds, Doctor. Your book, Sanctioned, the COVID Murders, and your other book, Heroes and Villains, the COVID-19 Book of Lists. Ladies and gentlemen, those two books can be found on Amazon.com. I recommend both the books for you to follow up on what Dr. Sheftall has told us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Tune in tonight at 11 for a replay of today's